Beckett, in his late period of reductive minimalism, when he was rehearsing his play Play at the National Theatre in 1964, demanded an ever more restricted utterance, less inflected, less expressive. One member of the cast remembered him saying, "If there were machines who could play these parts, I wouldn't use actors." In the same theatre, the Old Vic, on other nights, actors were being let loose on a vast repertoire, and, consequently, the widest possible range of acting styles. As time has gone on, the plundering of the past has continued in a way unparalleled before our era, bringing period pieces blinking from the library into the limelight. At the same time, despite the wholesale smashing of moulds in music, painting and sculpture, has acting remained essentially unchanged? A craft, or art, if you insist, for which Hamlet's 400-year-old advice to the players remains relevant. Show virtue her own feature, scorn her own image, and the very age and body of the time his form and pressure. As we all know, in all but the rarest performances of Hamlet, we see the players blithely disregarding Hamlet's advice, plunging into the dumb show at pains to demonstrate how different the behaviour of itinerant mime artists is from that of Danish courtiers. "Leave off thy damnable faces and begin," shouts the frustrated Hamlet. One remembers Chekhov's remark when he saw a rehearsal of his Seagull at its first production in St. Petersburg in 1896. "They act a lot. I wish there wasn't so much acting." Here is the problem, the great stumbling block of style. We know, though, that if the curtain were ever to go up on real life, the audience would realize the mistake immediately. Nevertheless, the painter J.B. Yeats compared Isadora Duncan dancing on stage to a kitten playing for itself. Doesn't that chime perfectly with Henry Irving's advice to the actor? You must be moved by the impulse of being. It might help if we were able to think of acting as our natural state, as natural as the kitten's play. Through the imaginative game of let's pretend, we extend the boundaries of our childhood experience. Parental, directorial intervention, if you like, in the way we act, ensures that pretense creeps in. This is different, being the social modification of our most primal needs and attitudes, so that we may conform to what parents, relations, teachers and friends expect from us and find acceptable. Freud has taught us that becoming too skilled at these good-mannered pretenses can make us strangers to our vital inner selves. Modern therapy has brought the primal scream into the clinic, the scream that was once heard with pity and terror by the audiences of Greek tragedy. Our complex and sophisticated adult games, developed to great peaks of Olympian skill, performed within the strictest rules, are the safe ritualization of the competitive struggles, stratagems, bluffs and deceptions of the elemental real-life struggle for the survival of the fittest. But is play-acting the most sophisticated variant of all in our human playfulness? The most vital, the most necessary? Taking us back to the heart of the game of Let's Pretend, the game not of disguise, but of revelation. Tragedy, in the safety of play and understood convention, reveals the most dangerous elements of our human nature and dilemma. Comedy jokes about serious things, humiliations, deceptions, pain, danger, surprise, hubris and nemesis, its poles, whether in the clown's routine or in the clash of attitudes in the most elegant comedy of manners. I was amused to see a credit for movement director in the programme of Wanderlust at the Royal Courts Theatre upstairs the other night. It is an ultra-naturalistic play, done in an ultra-realistic style. Lots of talking, moving, dressing and undressing, like ordinary human beings. So one is forced to conclude that the movement director was brought in to stage the scenes of sexual intercourse, at least five of them, which are nothing if not realistic. 46 years ago, the movement director Claude Chagrin employed French mime techniques to recreate the lost culture of the Incas for the National Theatre, the premiere of The Royal Hunt of the Sun. The span of time between that and the other night's choreographed spectacle of human beings doing that which, I imagine, has not fundamentally changed since well before the ancient Greeks, is, by anyone's standards, enormous. In my young day, we used to joke about the actor who was offered a tour of a play by a manager. "I can only offer you equity minimum, but there's a practical cake in the last act." Now, there's, need I say more?